And you're welcome back to the programme. The time now, 25 minutes to 6 o'clock. It's a Monday evening, and at that time we usually discuss careers in our career corner spot. And welcome, Liam Horan. Good evening to you, Liam.
Good evening, Aidan.
And thank you again for joining us. Now, Liam, last week we had difficulties with the phone lines. Thankfully, nothing like that this evening. Let's talk firstly about an issue we hoped to discuss last week but couldn't for that reason. The length of a CV. Many people contact you and indeed us inquiring about what is the correct length of a CV.
Well, there's an international organisation, Career Directors International. In fact, I'm a member of it. And I went back researching what their studies have shown in recent years. And one of the things that people were talking a lot about, the one-page CV, in fact, there wasn't as much interest in that among employers as it might be thought. And generally, what the research has shown, and what has been certainly our experience as well, is it's two pages, about 800 words should be sufficient for a CV. Your job writing a CV is to write it in such a way that you put the good stuff in front of the employer. So not to look upon it as an exhaustive list of every single thing you've ever done, but a list of relevant things you have done and relevant benefits you can bring to the employer. And really, after two pages, you're asking the employer to read a great deal. And in a world of ever-shrinking concentration spans, that's not a good idea. And the danger always is, if you go into a third page, that the really good stuff is buried somewhere and the employer doesn't get to it, or is jaded by the time they get there, or doesn't really realize this is significant. So we talk a lot about early impact. Get a lot of good stuff on the front page of your CV, but try and wrap it up in 800 words, two pages, is what we recommend, and it's generally supported by international evidence as well.
Many years ago, Albert Reynolds remarked that he was a one-page man, and I suppose in terms of CV, that type of thinking is what's required, really.
Yeah, well, Mark Twain, another great leader, said, another great man, said, I wrote you a long letter because I hadn't time to write you a short one.
Yes.
So if you can achieve, you have to work hard to get your CV shortened to 800 words. The easy thing to do is to keep writing to four or five pages. You might think you're, you know, getting everything in there, but I would argue that it's a law of diminishing returns, that the more you tell people, the greater the chance they won't hear it or won't read it. So it really is important to keep fine-tuning it so that it's a very sharp, tight document that has a lot of key points that the employer wants to see sitting up in front of them there, that they don't have to go acting like a water diviner with their water rods to go off and find where the good stuff is.
The trick is to make the impact as quickly as you can once that document is read by whomsoever.
Yeah, and there's a test that I think I've referenced it here before in this slot called the half-page test that we recommend people to do with their CVs. If you fold your CV, the front page of your CV in half and just read that, and then ask yourself, having read that, if I were an employer, would I be minded to bring this person in for interview? And what you'll generally find with people's CVs at the first half, which is the early impact you talk about, the first half of that page is taken up with long, exhaustive details of name, address, maybe a teaching council number, phone number, date of birth, nationality, driver's license, all of which, or some of which, might be interesting information to have, but should not dominate the first half page of your CV. So you should be getting into stuff very early on that is relevant to the employer. And you must change it for every time you send your CV out so that you're putting information down there that is relevant to the very employer that's going to read it. Your CV can be read by dozens of people, but you must remember that at any given time it's only been read by one person, and you need to try to think about what they would like to see on your CV to get them interested to bring it to the next stage.
Now let's move on to the problem for this evening. Question from LR, received by email. I've just been called for a second interview for a job. I've a lot of experience in the sector and know I'd be a good fit for the position. I felt I did very well in the first interview and I'm now just wondering what more can I do second time round. Any thoughts?
Yeah, well, second interviews are very funny. A lot of people, when they get called for a second interview, move into a kind of complacent dome, believing, oh God, I nearly have it now, I'm nearly there. But that's a very dangerous place. As I heard Michael and Liam talking earlier on about Galway and Kilkenny in the replay, you've got to perform in the second interview as well. And you've got to bring something fresh. You've got to complement or consolidate what you talked about in the first interview, but maybe bring a few new ideas, certainly new passion, a kind of a sense of having met you on the first occasion. I am now more than ever interested in this job. I've got to know your company better, and I'm very, very keen to advance beyond this stage. But the first thing LR must do is understand that they haven't got the job yet. In fact, as I've said, two or three other people perhaps have got the same email or the same call. So, you know, you've got to prepare and bring something stronger to the table. Things you should probably try and find out if you can. And you can certainly contact the HR person or whoever you've been dealing with to find out some of this. Will it be the same interviewing panel? If not, who might be on the panel? And you're looking for titles other than names. Example, sales manager, brand manager, production manager, whatever it is. Can I make a presentation? You know, and I would always be looking for a way of making a presentation, even when you hand out a hard copy or a PowerPoint, just because you need to up your game for the second interview. Just find out what's there. If they expressly debar you from making a presentation, well, that's that. But I certainly would be inquiring about that. I'd also be asking about would there be two interviews on the day? Because sometimes, as employers get further down the stretch, they will bring you to maybe an aptitude test or a psychometric test on the day as well. And generally they'll tell you that, but you never know. And to try and remove surprises, it'd be good for LR to find out what exactly is planned on the day. And also, if you can find out again, and though this is not a deal breaker, will this be the final stage in the process, so that you just know going in there what you might be facing. One thing you could do, or the LR could do, whether it's male or female, I don't know, is jot down notes from the first interview. What did you do well? What might you have done better? What did you fail to tell them? What did you learn? And use a lot of that to inform your second interview. It would be good to have more examples. In the first interview, they're likely to have exhausted a number of examples of competencies or times they did certain things. It would be good to have further examples and not to have to rehash the examples you gave in the first interview. They'd be the key things, I'd say. Preparation, preparation, preparation. It was true for the first interview, and it'll be even more true for the second interview.
And I suppose if you just look at it logically, you sent in your CV on the basis of that you were called to the first interview. On the basis of your performance at that interview, you've been called back for a second interview. I suppose the thing is, what can I do now that I didn't do on the last occasion, but that's going to bring me over the line?
Yes, and you have to. This is the thing. What got you to the second interview may not get you beyond the second interview, yeah. Which is why I say you must come with something extra. I like the idea of presentation. I have worked with a lot of clients who brought just a simple A4 page in Microsoft Word, nothing flashy, no bells and whistles, just a few thoughts about ideas I have for this job, what I would bring to this job, things like that. Employers are always impressed when you take time to put something on paper. There's not enough of it done, I would argue. It concentrates your own mind, and it also gives them something they can put in your file or put in your folder and look at a little bit later on in the day. So I don't know what exactly the scenario is in LR's case here, but if there's something they could put down on paper, as I said, you know, ideas for this position, not just what I would bring, but actual real ideas, you know, but expansion or new ways of doing things is certainly something. I think that most candidates don't do that, and that alone would be a very powerful thing to do. If executed properly, make sure to check spellings and make sure it's laid out nicely without being extravagant. That's certainly something they can do.
And just
what you said about their age, about you've got through the CV stage, you've got through the first interview stage, take a boost of confidence in that as well. They have now more or less said, we know you can do this job. We're now down to finding out which of two or three or four candidates is the very best candidate. So you're seriously in the mix, and, you know, go in there with confidence, but prepare with the same hunger as if you were an underdog, you know.
And just what you were saying earlier, Liam, perhaps contact the company and find out whether or not it's going to be the same interview board. Would that be regarded as perhaps wise on the part of the candidate, or perhaps overly pushy? Would it give a good impression or a bad impression, do you think?
No, companies, in my experience, don't mind when you want to prepare properly. They don't take it too badly. They don't take it badly at all. They would see it as being consistent with somebody who's got attention to detail and that kind of thing. But when you ring, you talk not to the interview panel, but try and talk to somebody that you've been liaising with. So somebody has been sending you emails or sending you letters. There's probably been a bit over and back confirming I can be there in the day. You can ask those people in a way, don't be pushy. If they can't tell you anything, so that's no problem. Preface it by saying that I'm just trying to understand who exactly I'll be talking to, because what often happens in second interview is that somebody more senior comes into the mix, and it's good to know that. It's not, as I said earlier on, it's not going to collapse the scrum if you don't find out, but it's all part of preparation. You need to know what level you're talking at, who you're talking to, what their specialities are, and if you don't get it off the HR person, you might get word from somebody else within the company how this generally goes. But if you deal in a mannerly, professional way with HR people or recruiters, they're generally very open to that. Because don't forget, the company are also trying to solve a problem here. They're trying to get the best candidates. So
indeed,
they want the interviews to be as beneficial as possible as well.
Very good. We must leave it at that, Liam. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for joining us on the programme. And we'll talk to you again around the same time next Monday evening, 5:30 or thereabouts.
Thank you very much, Eden.
And thank you. And that's Liam Horan with our Careers Corner every Monday evening at 5:30. Liam, of course, Managing Director with Slí Nua Careers.